Hey, welcome back to Gregory and Paul Show. I'm Gregory.
And I'm Paul.
We stream live every Thursday, 11 a.m. Pacific time. What time is it for you?
It's 2 p.m. Eastern.
2 p.m. And we like to break down the latest in SaaS startups, AI, memes, whatever people are arguing with me and Paul on X about. Yes, I've got a great show for you today. Let me run through the topics. We want us to kick it off with new research from Cloudflare, right?
Yeah, from Cloudflare, the CEO tweeted something pretty groundbreaking, I think.
Yeah.
We should talk about it on the show.
Yeah. He says bots are now occupying more of the internet than humans. We'll have an interesting discussion about that. We're going to discuss Microsoft banning Claude code from their teams. We'll discuss the engineering layoffs. There's some really interesting perspectives about how it's not AI. Perhaps it is the end of ZERP, the zero interest rate environment that we're in for. God, was it like 15 years we had 0% interest rates? More than 10.
Crazy. Crazy.
We'll talk about the Anthropic IPO. No, the S1 is not available, but we do have information.
Just speculate.
We can just make it up. We'll talk about Google's capital raise. iOS 27. We have some really interesting information to share about the SpaceX IPO. And we got one final topic. Maybe we'll get time to discuss some research from McKinsey regarding the end of the weekly sprint. Is that correct, Paul?
Yeah. So McKinsey came out with a really interesting piece of content talking about how we're retiring the 2-week sprint, which is how software was built for the last, I would say, 15 years. This is all the agile philosophy. And 15 years prior, we did this thing called waterfall, where you create a giant document. And now we're moving towards 24-hour release cycles. Very interesting.
Are you a fan of agile? Did you ever like Scrum Master and all that stuff? Did you get into that?
Yeah, that was kind of like the default development cycle where you ran sprint planning, and you do burn down charts, you hired agile coaches, Scrum Masters, Lex managers. I wouldn't say a fan, but I understood the need for them.
All right, let's. We'll go back to that one. That one. This.
We'll
one
come
was
to
nerdy. That one's pretty nerdy. Let's kick it off with the research from Cloudflare. Let me bring this up here so we can be very specific about, because I'm curious like how they're measuring it. Okay, so the chart says automated versus human HTTP requests distribution of HTML content. So just to be really clear about how they are measuring this, it's a detection of the request of HTML content. And if it is a bot or a human, do you have any perspective or understanding of like how they determine if those requests are bots?
Yeah, so every single web traffic has a user agent attached to it.
Oh, and that's what they're looking at?
And that's mostly what they're looking at, and known IP addresses. So for example, if the IP is coming from a server block, from a server, then they tag that as potential bot traffic. Of course, there are bots on the internet that pretends to be human, but Cloudflare has a whole bunch of like anti-bot detection software running on websites, on their CDNs. But potentially, yeah, that's the three ways that they can track human versus machine.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, Matthew Prince said that in his tweet, he thought this wouldn't happen until 2027. So it's happening a bit earlier. I don't think anyone ultimately is surprised that bot traffic
right.
is going to outpace human traffic, particularly like with all the agent activity that's out there. We've known that bots have been on the internet for a while. Some of them are useful. Some of them are perhaps done under the guise of, you know, that it's human activity. You know, what do you think this means for the internet going forward? Does this like prove the dead internet theory? Like, is this something that people should be concerned about? Like, I'm curious, like, what are your thoughts on this particular
So dead internet theory no longer just a theory. It is pretty much proven where bot or agent traffic is now more than human. It just means that at least the agents will become first tier consumers of the internet. Bots are a little bit interesting because they are trying to mimic how humans are. Agents, at least, especially controlled by humans, are doing tasks for a human. So websites, content providers, data providers should basically create new software that targets agents instead of humans. So that is a huge thing that we've haven't really thought about, and nobody really has begin to tackle that yet. Yeah.
It's interesting, like there's even some comments where people are asking about, does it distinguish between bots, crawlers, and agents? And at least the way that they're doing this, they do not, right? But I think you make a good point. Like, does it mean that agent-to-agent marketing, agent-to-agent communication is something that people
e-commerce
need to
take yeah seriously? Exactly.
I don't know. I mean, are you doing anything agent-to-agent or know anyone who's doing that today?
No, we're still in the very, very early stages. So there is protocols like APA protocol where you can communicate between agents. However, it's more of like an adoption cycle, right? We're so early in the adoption cycle that businesses are just creating, let's say, MCP servers for you to plug your agents into, but it's not a two-way street. It's usually just propagating and broadcasting. I think we're probably 6 months away from saying actual things like having your agent speak to my agent. I think we're about 6 to 12 months away from that, where that becomes a thing.
I feel so old and cranky. Like, I don't like the fact that they still hallucinate and there's a lot of mistakes. And that would be my like concern with an agent. It's interesting. Like, sometimes I feel like I'm all on my own on this. Like, I don't like the fact that there's so much incorrect information and data in these AI agents and bots. So I posted this thing the other day about like, hey, what are people doing with AI? I'd love to up-level my game. And a lot of people came back with like, oh, I'm using it for research. And I was like, okay, great. Because I use it for research too. And I find like half of the stuff's wrong all the time, constantly. And like, no one seems to have an answer for this. Like, or a fact, like, I feel like people act kind of surprised when I tell them that I find so many errors and mistakes and hallucinations. Like, it makes me feel like I'm on my own. Like, I'm the only one who like is worried about the fact that like so much of the data, at least my experience, is incorrect.
It's so like AI agents basically enabled everybody to create their own Wikipedia of knowledge. Remember like when Wikipedia first became a thing? Well, I remember in school.
Yeah.
Teachers or people or my teachers would very specifically tell us that you cannot use Wikipedia as a citation source. You just like absolutely cannot, because it's curated by humans. Humans make mistakes. It's not, has not gone under filter. So like with
there's
AI,
no
it's kind
checking.
Of like, there's no rigorous, multiple sources of double checking. It is just curated by a select few moderators on Wikipedia, and they have biases, etc.
Well,
so like,
you know,
AI is basically the exact same thing, but like distributed to every single person now.
I mean, that's my big issue with this stuff, is like, it's just wrong a lot. I get broken links.
It's wrong.
That's right. Like, it's just not correct. Like, that's just so. So I'd be like very reluctant to be like, oh, agent, go out there and do a bunch of stuff for me. Then it confidently does a bunch of things wrong. I'd be like, that's not really what I'm excited about. The other thing that I'll say about this is that I found, this was the other thing that came up in this thread. The complexity of seemingly simple tasks are high. So no one can answer for me, like, how does this make a playlist for me on a weekly basis? And I get a lot of like, oh, just like automate the playlist thing. And I'll automate it generating a playlist. And I'm like, but that's only one part of it. And the connector to Spotify breaks all the time. Like, I try to use it and it's like, oh, fails. It doesn't go through. And that doesn't create the graphics. It doesn't place it in my newsletter. There's like a whole bunch of steps that it needs to go through, like just to create the graphics in Canva and do them the right size and all that stuff. I had someone tell me like, you can use Claude to do it, but like you can't. Claude doesn't find the images for you and size them correctly. It's basically like user experience design. It can create like websites and like widgets and buttons and all the things you do, but it doesn't create like graphics. And I've not been successful at getting to do it correctly to size. So if anyone has, like, let me know. I'm happy to test it out, because that's what I would like to do. But
you have to massage it a lot.
Yeah, I found like a lot of practical challenges when you try to implement this in a real workflow. You're like, okay, the graphic's exactly this size and it doesn't do it. And then it places in this place here and it can't get there. It can't go where we need it to go, you know?
Yeah. So like, I mean, in summary with what Cloudflare says, you have to take it with a grain of salt, right? They're in the business of helping other companies block bot traffic. So, of course, they're incentivized to tell people
it's all bots.
It's all bots on the internet.
I have no doubt that they're... So, okay, have you ever done this? Like, there's, like, places where I have, like, a... Like, so on LinkedIn, I have, like, a community that I run that there's no members of, so I can post things there and test it. And I'll post things in there, and then I'll come back and see, like, it's got, like, 40 views. Like, how does it have 40 views in a private community I own that there's no one else who is allowed to see it? So how are people seeing that?
Yeah, just bots.
Bots
are scraping. Bots are siphoning every single piece of content on the internet.
And it's getting through whatever permissions are set up. Or it's LinkedIn's own bots. Or like, I don't know. Like,
it's LinkedIn's own bots, some like backdoor caching something, data sharing.
I thought that was so funny. Like, it wasn't like two or three hits. It was like 40. I was like, how does this have 40 views? Like,
yeah, totally. Totally. And then you're posting this obscure forum subreddit, and then people shows up to like comment on it. You're like, come on.
All right. So more bots and people. Let's move on and talk about Microsoft banning Claude Code. So I put some
blaming as well.
Yeah, blaming. Yeah, correct. Because like people are saying that like Microsoft bans AI, which is not true. They're not banning AI. I would reframe this as like they have decided to move off of Claude and use their own tool. And what I read was that it's mostly GitHub Copilot, although they have their own, they have other tools. And the answer for why is they want to use model routing to lower costs.
Yeah. Yeah, we have a few pieces of content that's coming up to talk about this. But yeah, so cost of token is through the roof. Sam Altman tweeted or came out with saying businesses are cutting back on token spend. Uber also came out with a piece of content, a news release about capping the token spend to $1,500 a month per developer. So all of the trend is that we're going towards spending less, spending better. Microsoft is making the exact same cut over here. So while AI is getting cheaper every single year, the bill is getting larger because the demand is going up.
Wait, did you see the thing today where like, what was it? Altman was saying someone spends $1 billion. What was this? Right. So this thing came out today, right? Sam Altman says OpenAI's top token spender uses 100 billion tokens a month.
Yes.
And they're not even the world leader.
Yeah, they're correct. A lot of these enterprises are no longer on the subsidized subscription plans. They are paying for token costs, API token costs. So the cost is like X, what you and me would pay for. So enterprises are running scared. They're paying millions and millions a month on tokens.
This has got some good stuff in it. Peter Steinberger, the creator of OpenClaw, said he once spent $1.3 million worth of tokens in 1 month.
For sure. Yeah, for sure.
Oh my God. Crazy.
So like this, think about this, right? Like, so as an organization, you're literally looking at your single highest spending going towards one or two companies on your invoice every single month, on your line item every single month. That's scary.
Yeah. Do you think this is overblown though? There's just like these news stories and they're like amplifying some like edge cases, perhaps. I mean, if the guy like Peter's the creator of OpenClaw, like I'm not actually that surprised, like testing a thing that he hit $1 million, right? Like he built a thing. So is it possible that like this is just hype? Like, are you experiencing this? Like, I know you do vibe coding. Like, do you have like a token budget? Like, are you blowing out your budget? Like, is this real? Is this for everyone?
Yeah. So there's not all token is spent equally. Not every single token is producing the same measurable outcome. So like I do a lot of token optimization, where I make my coding agent harness to evaluate how it's spending token every single iteration.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of people in the world, developers, creators, they do not do this. They just basically type in a prompt, expect the output. Maybe the output used 1 million tokens. They don't really understand. And all they see is dollars being spent on the other side. So like this is the first time companies and also maybe CFOs even are now kind of digging to the books, figuring out where all of this cost is going, what's the ROI on the token spending, they're asking the right questions. I think it's not overblown. I
are
think
you
it's,
doing model routing? Like, are you using like low cost open source models? Like, I'm curious to know.
Yes. So there are model routing companies out there. OpenRouter is probably one of the biggest ones. There are smaller companies that raised VC funding that solves exactly this problem, that helps you do this automatically. I do this manually, as in I know exactly what my workflows are. If it's coding, I use Claude. I use the most expensive Opus models. If it's just summarizing things, I would drop it down to something like Gemini 3.1 Flash. So like I use multiple models for sure.
You know, I met a guy like about a year ago who was working on this. And I was like, this is going to be a big business, like model routing, like tools. And I'm convinced that like, it's a huge opportunity. It's interesting too, like it parallels like other technology waves I've been through where there's some type of like product or challenge in the marketplace where there's lots of vendors.
Yes.
And
yes.
I've seen it all the time. It almost you could define it as like market's new, lots of people get funded. So there's lots of options usually in certain types of like tools or products or solutions that you need. And so what emerges a lot of time is these middleware things that allow people to like route it to different versions of it.
Yeah.
And then the next phase, and I'm curious if you think this is what's going to happen. What'll happen is the cost actually will come down and they'll come down pretty dramatically. And so like the need to route gets reduced and players consolidate. Like the market doesn't exist as this like wildly fragmented environment where costs are really different between all the different options. That's what I think will happen.
Yeah, I agreed there. I just don't know what the timeline is. So lots of people are building or solving the constraint, the token constraint issue. That's a hardware problem. People like NVIDIA solving this, lots of different hardware startup. Google just, we'll talk about this later, I think. Google just raised $80 billion to solve this problem as well. But that might be on the horizon of 5 to 10 years to be fully solved, where tokens actually become a commodity. In the meantime, these routing companies are, I think what you're alluding to is this like bundling and unbundling. So AI companies became this huge unbundler where it's bundling all of software spend into one. And now we're seeing the first wave of unbundling, where these routing companies are unbundling a token spend across multiple providers, right? Open source providers would probably be the biggest benefactor in this scenario. So
yeah, absolutely, right? And so that's what I see is that the cost will quickly come down. Also, if like there is demand, which
there's
what
demand.
This all demonstrates, right? So it's definitely demand.
Exactly.
So the obvious, like every, like this time and time again, the solution to high prices is the market solves for it by creating more supply, right?
And correct.
Like, do you remember like after COVID where like truck drivers were in short supply and shipping was expensive and like it's all solved, right? It constantly happens like where you see these kind of boom and bust cycles in a lot of markets.
Yep.
Where there's like huge demand. And so, yeah, I'm convinced that like they'll build out all these data centers. They'll have so much
power plants
that like, yeah, the token costs will come way down.
So like my ultimate long-term view is whether if the government gets involved in providing token as like a basic good. So like maybe we will eventually get to a point where the government gets involved and token becomes a commodity that's just being subsidized by the government. So much like electricity, right? Like we created all this infrastructure, government spent a lot creating the infrastructure into electricity, and now it's a common good. So it could potentially, that could become the final form of all of this. Right now we're letting private companies build power plants and build data centers, but if we get to a certain level of demand, we might need the government to be involved.
Okay, I got a really like out of left field question for you. You ready?
Go for it.
So like with all this happening in tokens and data centers, routing compute to different people, why is crypto and the blockchain not having some moment to like solve for a lot of these problems? Like, wasn't crypto originally designed to do this? Like the whole idea is that there's tokens that have value that incentivize compute. That is the basic, like fundamental structure or function of the blockchain. So why isn't the blockchain right now having this huge moment in like all of this?
Yeah. So they did it backwards. The problem with like blockchain, Web3 and crypto is that they did it backwards. As in, they tried to like do a one-for-one copy of the current financial system or how companies transact with other businesses. Like, this is where like what Web3 did was it created a complete unbundling, as saying you could make your own tokens, you could spend different tokens, and you relied on where it kind of gained mainstream is when these companies like Coinbase started to bundle all of them together. So
why
like,
isn't it, do you follow me, but like shouldn't it be like super popular right now to like use crypto as a way to like route and incentivize and solve for this like high token cost issue to some degree, right? Like there's got to be all kinds of like data out there, data in terms of like compute providers, and they could all be incentivized on the blockchain. Like that's like what it's supposed to do fundamentally, right? Like,
yeah,
I don't know. I was never a big believer.
No, it's actually a really good question.
But it seems like an obvious question, right? Is like the underlying technology of like Bitcoin and how these things work is that tokens are generated by computers and they're shared or they're distributed in order to like facilitate a free market so that you utilize the capacity better. Like it's exactly what is required to manage compute in an AI system.
Yeah, you raised a really good question.
In theory.
This is actually a really good question.
I told you I was just throwing this at you. So
I think they just went down a really deep rabbit hole with no real concrete widespread use case. Like in crypto, it's not, so like in Ethereum and like the concept of crypto blockchain with the tokens, nobody has really figured out besides like it's replacing fiat currency, what exactly a token is used for. NFT was something kind of like alluding to this. And then dApps were something that was kind of trying to figure out a use case for.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, nobody really figured out what do I use this for? And they created all of this technology to do like zero trust, where you validate if a token was spent or if it was transferred, proof of work. All of this technology was created for basically no real world use case. And then I think people just got bored, or people just kind of like stopped giving a fuck, and capital is dried up, so investors stopped investing.
I'll tell you what I think. I think that like what it proves is that the decentralized nature of Web3, let's call it, is valueless, is what I think it means. So I think I think these systems could be applied to the current challenges that people have with distributing compute across AI systems, but it doesn't matter if you own the entire value chain. So if you own the data center, you own the model, you own the client relationship, you control what applications are on the system, who cares that it's decentralized? Just centralize it all. Just like have your own system.
Right.
And it's not clear that there's like an incentive for them to make it more efficient, right? So in theory, what I'm saying is like crypto, blockchain, or Web3 would make these systems more efficient. Why would they make them more efficient? Like they want to just increase token costs. Like that's obviously their incentive.
They jumped. That's right. Yeah. So like Web3 jumped the gun, right? Like they tried to make everything super efficient, but nobody actually wanted that. They just wanted one or two choices, maybe three choices, and then I can just pick.
Well, there's not enough. There's not millions and millions of these like personal data centers or something. Although like people are talking about this, but like there's no decentralized problem to solve for, right? Like Google owns data centers, Microsoft owns data centers. Like there's not like you and I like, oh, we have three of them and our buddies have two and someone else has one and they're just all over the place. Like that's why I think like the decentralized like concept, which is really core to crypto, it's kind of valueless, which is ultimately what I always believed. They had to solve for that piece. It was a big part of what they were solving for. And
yeah,
like, what's the value of it? Like, why does it all need to be decentralized?
Nobody at the end of the day cares.
That's decentralized. Doesn't matter. Like, incentivizing computers is a good idea with tokens, right? But it's like you could do it without blockchain as the other. I guess, like, this is interesting. Like, we're thinking of this in real time. The really the innovation with blockchain is that it solved for anonymity. So if like the fragmentation piece and anonymous users don't matter, there's no need for it.
Yeah. Okay. So like I'll add on to that.
Yes.
So like the anonymity part comes in when there's centralized resource allocators that determines or decides where does your money go or where does resource gets allocated. So like if the foreseeable future token cost does not come down and token gets allocated, let's say token cost stays high, but the value of getting access to token gives you like 100x advantage over people without token access, then this becomes a huge problem for like normal citizens, for companies. Because like if a resource stays scarce enough, government gets involved. Yeah, or like super powerful entity like a
government. There's some need to intervene
because they become the allocators, right? So that's where kind of blockchain with this decentralization would apply. But this is a very like, I wouldn't say call it dystopian, but this is like a very anti-capitalistic where the entire purpose of our machine, our economic model is created around tech improves, tech reduces the cost of the good, and the good becomes abundant.
It's like the only innovation that I've been a part of where the cost hasn't come down very fast. Like I still believe it'll come down, but I've never seen something where it just keeps going up for like, I don't know, 2 or 3 years. It's wild. Let's move on. I think we could tie this back in. We have a couple other things to talk about, but I do want to get into this like ZERP issue. And just to define this, because like it's funny, I use this term all the time, like on Twitter. I've had people like, dude, what?
Yeah, we have. Totally.
What is ZERP? And so, do you know what it stands for?
Zero interest rate policy.
Policy, right? So right. What this was like during
the pandemic.
Yeah. Well, no, dude, it's way back. It goes back to the GFC, Great Financial Crisis, right? So like when basically the entire economy almost like fell into the dirt, they had to like put rates at zero, make lending free in order to incentivize the economy. And like, I remember with the GFC, like 2008, it actually took a long time. Like the 0% interest rate policy, which like never been a fan of. At the time, you could argue that it worked. Like it did spur investment. It got people to take more financial risk, which they didn't want to do. And then it just stayed for like a long time and it made it really easy to borrow money and invest, right? So there's a lot of people who are saying that that environment where borrowing was really cheap led to like maybe this overhiring is a term that I like to use.
Yep.
For what's going on with these tech firms. And of course, like, they're saying that it's AI is why they're laying people off. But a lot of the other people are putting a counter narrative out there that it's actually the fact that they have too many people. And so when costs were much lower in terms of borrowing, it was just easier to do. The other thing that I haven't heard, I mean, some people have talked about this. So there was a theory like back when I was in Silicon Valley that the hiring was part of like preventing people from starting competing companies. So because borrowing costs were low, it meant that raising venture capital to compete directly with like the people like Google was something they wanted to prevent. And so they hired a lot of people so that they weren't free to go and start their own company. And I actually think that that was like a big part of it. And if it's much more expensive to borrow today, it's much harder to get funded. Everyone agrees on that. Obviously, it's harder to start competitors. So laying people off and like putting more people on the job market, maybe even creating more startups out there isn't as big of a risk or a threat to some of the big tech companies. What do you think about that?
So one thing out of all of this conversation that I want to pay attention to is, are these layoff people getting rehired? I feel like we spend a lot of times focused on the number of people getting laid off. We don't talk enough about, are they getting rehired? Where are they going afterwards? How long?
What is your anecdotal experience? Like, what do you think? I mean, we both know a lot of people have been laid off, right?
Yeah. I think it's like both AI had an effect on, let's say, developers getting laid off in maybe late 2023 through 25. However, due to the demand of AI, lots of companies are now rehiring these developers back. So personally, I had a dev agency around 2023, all the complete collapse of dev costs. So people used to be willing to pay six figures for a simple web app project. This was consistent through pandemic during the ZERP era. Right around after pandemic, right around GPT 3.5's release, that was completely dropped by like 80%. So people were no longer willing to spend that money on dev projects. So like anecdotally, I do think there is effect on dev resources. For other types of work like project management or middle management, I don't think AI had such a big effect because nobody has, they can say that it's a one-for-one translation. Maybe designers, I don't know.
I'm trying to think really deeply about everyone I know, people who've been laid off stuff. So like there's definitely a group of people who got rehired for sure.
Right.
And I want to say it's the majority of people I know, but majority meaning like 50%.
Right.
So let's say of all the people I've known been laid off, like half got rehired or even found other jobs before the layoff happened, right? But that leaves, let's call it like 49% people who did not find jobs easily after that. And so of that group, I know a lot of people who went and started their own company or doing their own thing, which I think is awesome. And I think that like, it's great that this has incentivized people to go out there and build startups and do like what I'm doing, become a consultant, start your own agency, build something cool. I think that's awesome because I think that's really, really good for the economy. I know for myself, like it's been fantastic to just work for myself. Like I don't want to ever go back to working a big company and having like a boss again. I'd be terrible for me. I don't think I could handle it anymore. So it's been great. I really love it. But that's not everyone. I do know people who've been out of work for a long time. And particularly like if you're like mid to late career, it's been really hard for certain people. But I want to say that like that is something that I've seen in every technology cycle. There's a point where, you know, if you're in management or you're also a developer, it's had a lot of experience, you become very expensive for the company. And
I think that's the main issue.
And it's nothing new. It's nothing new, right? That it becomes very difficult to get hired when you're 40 plus, 50 plus. And so, yeah. So I know people in that situation. You know, I want to be... Go ahead.
I think that's the main issue. Like, I'm just looking at the zero interest rate policy charts. I literally just had a realization that all of my professional life, I've never experienced a non-zero rate interest rate policy. I started my professional life in 2008.
You and like a lot of kids. That's one reason everyone's like just crying. Was it so hard? Like never seen this.
Right. So like maybe if you're a little bit older, this is just one of the cycles. If you're a little bit younger, came in right between in the middle of a ZERP, you would think that, you know, this is just how things are. But for a good chunk of millennials, we think that this is normal, but it's not.
Yeah,
interest rate policy is not normal.
It happens a lot of industries. Like it's inevitable in any market, right? Think about it. Like a bunch of people start out,
totally.
They all advance. Not everyone can like become an executive or become a VP of engineering. There's just not as many roles, right? And so it just gets more competitive as you age in your career in general. Right. Like even if you decide I don't want to be a manager, I just want to be an IC, it still becomes difficult because like you just have more experience and you cost the company more money. There's more liabilities, whatever. And I know there's a lot of people that are really frustrated about this, but that's just the way it is. And so I just want to be clear that there are answers, right? Like starting your own company, being a consultant, maybe doing something else with your career. I think those are all viable. And I think that I guess that's my advice is like people just need to be realistic about what they need to do in order to evolve. And I think those are the people I've seen that really struggle is where they can't change. They just want to go back to doing the same thing and they have to like find a new way. And I know it's like easy to say, but like, look, I know a lot of people who figured it out, right? They start their own consultancy or they move into a new area or they go into something completely different. That's something I'm a huge advocate of. And I want to make this point because like, I think this is really important. I think if people are going to live really long these days, and I think careers are going to change a lot. And I think technology is going to evolve a lot too. So the stigma, the whole idea that you just have this like one career your entire life, I think is over and everyone should accept that it's over and getting into other things and doing going back to school, like whatever you want to do. think it's awesome, right? I think that's, people should be
I think it's super awesome.
Positive and optimistic about that.
Yeah, like we should remove this like stigma around midlife crisis, right? Like people tend to ask these questions right around their mid-career, but people should be asking this every 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, I wish that like the education system would evolve. Like people should be able to go back to school when they're much older. It's not designed like that for that. Like you're supposed to go to college.
That's a good point.
When you're young and then maybe trade school. It's not set up to operate in this way, and that's one of my criticisms. It doesn't mean that it can't.
Yeah,
like you can go back to school, you can get certificates, you can go into HVAC or whatever you want to do. I know a guy who left finance and runs a tree trimming business in Pacific Northwest. It's a fantastic business. A lot of storm, a lot of rains, a lot of trees that need help, and so he's doing great. He's excited. He gets to go outside and do something very physical. So like, there's plenty of opportunities like that. You just have to be open to change. Yeah, open to change. All right, let's combine these two things. So we've got like the Anthropic IPO and Google's raise. What do you want to say about these things?
Yeah, so Anthropic secretly filed their IPO S-1. S-1 is a document that kind of just talks about what their revenues are or what their projected revenues are, their income streams, all of the good stuff that the regulators or SEC reviews before they say yes or no. Interesting that they're filing this window where OpenAI, space simultaneously going IPO. Or
all the same time, right? Or similar time.
So what, like a couple trillion? Cool couple trillion worth of market value. Maybe even more, 3 trillion of market value will go onto the market simultaneously. That's going to shift dollars around, I would say. So like we talk about the Microsoft coming out and saying they are cutting off Anthropic spend to move in-house to their co-pilot. So it's interesting when a company's biggest customer is also their biggest competitor. Like, I don't think a lot of companies are in that situation, would you say? Like, that's...
Dude,
I don't know how to invest in this.
Oh, let's just talk about... So Google, just to be clear, Google
raised
$80 billion, right?
Yes.
So they raised They raised about as much money as it looks like Anthropic and OpenAI are targeting, right? It's more. It's even more than the SpaceX. SpaceX is targeting 75 billion. These numbers changed a bit, but like that's a lot of money. Like Google basically did an IPO level. Well, it's not even IPO level. Like a fundraise that is the level of like what these three massive private companies are looking to raise in the market, which is unprecedented, right? So Google clearly is saying like, we need this cash. We need to compete. Like, we know these guys are going to go to the market, going to raise all this money. We need that money, too. And, like, it hasn't been any secret. Like, I think Google is going to win. I think Google is just in the strongest position possible, particularly when it comes to consumer. I would even say that, like, I think that the cracks in OpenAI are around the fact that Google is a formidable competitor. And ChatGPT and OpenAI looked like they were really...
Totally.
They looked like they were really giving Google a run for their money, which was super exciting. And I'm still a big fan. I use ChatGPT all the time. I think it's a great tool. But like Google just has it figured out. And like, I don't know. I don't know where the wedge is for them to beat Google. It looks really hard. I mean, maybe they'll surprise me. But clearly like raising this amount of money is going to give Google like a big...
Yeah.
I think advantage ultimately over any competitor.
I think the biggest unknown right now is nobody knows if we can solve the token, the hardware problem. So if you dig into this, Google's $80 billion. First of all, Google makes a shit ton of cash, right? Like, why are they even raising money?
Right. They have a lot of money. Exactly.
They already have lots of money, but I think they've internally projected how much they need to spend on CapEx to solve this token issue that they're scared. Because like, basically this raise is saying, we make a lot of money, but a lot of this money is going to get burned into CapEx that we may or may not know the outcome of. If we dump the $80 billion like Facebook into the wrong project, we could go belly up.
I think you're dead on. Lose the war. If I was Google, I would calculate this out. Like, okay, let's assume it's like a war of attrition. Like, it's just going to come down to raw dollars at this point. Like, all the innovations have been made. there's not like going to get a lot of alpha because you create a new product, right? Like it'll have some influence. But at this point, like we kind of understand what the market looks like. We know who the players are. So how, what do we need to win in order just like to outlast everybody? And if we can raise
just
more
outlast.
Money. So dude, this is like, have you ever heard this rumor? This is what the U.S. did to the Soviet Union.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Cold War tactics. Essentially,
like,
just like...
CIA calculated it. Like there was economists. They were like, what would it take in order for the Soviet Union to go bankrupt? And how would we bankrupt them before we go bankrupt the United States? And that's what the ultimate goal of the arms race was.
That's exactly it. I think right now is the AI arms race. Like Google, Anthropic, OpenAI is doing this internally in U.S. At simultaneously, you're doing this against... China.
Is there anything else in this Anthropic IPO announcement? There's not a lot of information there, huh?
No.
I mean, they just raised money too, right?
They just raised money, but now they're going IPO because it's just capital. Just so much capital is needed. And I think anybody that's interested pre-IPO has invested. And Google is kind of jumping. Google is the first mover to tap an investor, like, first of all, the open market, and second of all, a Berkshire Hathaway, right? Yeah, Berkshire is not going
to... It's wild. Like, I don't know what to make of it. Like, I don't typically buy stocks on the IPO, on the open market in retail. So that, I'm definitely not going to do that.
Well, we should talk about SpaceX IPO. Will you buy SpaceX on day one?
Right. So we know the price.
$135 to open. It's only a 5% float. So they're only selling... 5% of additional shares of the company.
Well, if it's only $135, I definitely have that in my pocket right now. So no, I don't think
you'll
buying
get one share.
I don't think buying as just a retail investor with no edge, I don't think buying a stock on the IPO is generally a good idea. So I wouldn't do it. I think it will.
So like 5% float is not a lot. It's tiny supply plus lots of, I would assume, massive demand, some retail demand. The stock is going to pop.
So you use an investment bank to go public in order to make the stock go up the first day.
Yeah. It's so probably going to open at like double. I think it's going to open at 300.
Yeah. I think if it doesn't double the first day, it'd be viewed as a failure. But dude, that's what happened with Facebook. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Facebook.
Like the IPO was kind of like a flop. Like it kind of closed down. It wasn't very exciting. So we'll see. Sometimes I just buy these things for the fun of it. I have this little trading account. Like I'll buy like two shares just because it's fun to watch or whatever, just to be entertained. But I don't plan to make a big investment in it. I do believe strongly in the long-term value of SpaceX as a company. And so I do think at some point it could be a great investment. I wouldn't buy it at that price. I think the connectivity business, we've talked about this already, and Starlink is just going to be a monster, and they don't really have a competitor. And it's not clear like when they will have a competitor. So they basically got a monopoly on that. And you and I were talking about this too. Like, it might not put the mobile operators out of business, but it's a real competitor to mobile internet in general. And so, and there's no other provider. They can do it globally. They're already selling to airlines. Like, I'm excited to get it to use on the airplane. Military's using it, right? Like, it's a big part of like what's happening in the Ukraine. I don't actually know that many details, but like without whatever they're doing in Ukraine, like they wouldn't be able to control and fly and manage all those drones, right?
Yeah, I think like the long-term vision is to enable the additional billion or 2 billion people in what we say third world countries to come online. In like high-speed, non-mobile internet to come online.
It's just going to be a better service for most people too. Like I'm definitely going to get
it.
I've seen people using on the airplane who have their own system and stuff.
Yeah, totally.
And then like, dude, there's people that drive around Seattle that have it on their roof of their car.
Yeah. Yeah. Like if you go, I see them penetrating Latin America, like to bring entirety of Latin America online into modern day internet. Not to say that, like, I know that they have pretty good infrastructure through mobile, but this will be massive. And then the second thing is, of course, with the AI, they're merging like what? XAI, they're merging SpaceX, the rocket company, into one. Yeah, let's...
Dude, it's cool. Like, so I think like it's going to be, it's an excellent business. Like, you can't have the satellites without the rockets. So like, it's going to be great. I just wouldn't buy it at whatever it closes at, $207 a share.
Okay, prediction, end of the year stock price.
Oh, for SpaceX?
For SpaceX.
So what's that, 6 months?
6 months.
Usually they bottom out usually 6-7 months in, because a lot of the lockups for the employees expire and they're allowed to sell. And so there's a lot of selling and it pushes the price down. That would be my best guess.
Well, maybe we'll just do directional. Will it be above IPO price or under IPO price?
But this is a good one. Below.
So end of the year IPO target or price target.
I should go on Kalshi. We should bet on this. We should just do some bets on like what will the share price of SpaceX be on the final day of the year? That would be a fun one.
Yeah. Directional above or below IPO price.
No, we got to pick a number. I mean, well, yeah, above or below. Yeah. We could have another one. You could pick a number.
I think it's going to be above. Just the demand.
It's going to be above?
I think it's going to be above, maybe around the 300. I think it's going to be around the 300 range.
I mean, dude, it's possible. Like I said, I have no idea. It's totally possible. It depends on like.
So you're going to be, you're saying it's going to be below IPO price. Well, give me a number.
Okay. Here's another thing we haven't talked about though. Is like this stock in particular, not Anthropic, not AI, OpenAI, which I think are to some degree driven by like market sentiment fundamentals. These stocks are driven by like Elon. It's like a vote on like Elon. So they have no bearing on like the business at all. So like if Elon is like in great standings and everyone's excited about what he's doing and his fans are, you know, are positive, like the stock will be up, right?
But 100%.
But if Elon does anything stupid, then the stock tanks. Like it's a vote on like what people believe about Elon, right? What he bought.
It's Elon and the appetite for the general public or institutions.
Correct.
To
it's like an Elon tracking stock.
It's Elon tracking and just like, do you want to rotate your stocks out of Salesforce? If yes, where do you park it? Maybe SpaceX.
And then I don't know what happens with the Tesla question too. Like if Tesla and they merge, that will change. There's so many scenarios. It's very hard to be very clear about where this was. I think is very exciting about it. I also think that like it's a much better business than Tesla. Like making cars, hard business. Super. One of the reasons I don't own Tesla anymore as a stock. I just think that like people bought most of the electric fuels they wanted. They're going to sell a few, but I don't see it being like a giant growth market. But this thing with like satellite internet, like that is an awesome business. And I still really believe in like X and all the AI stuff they're doing.
X AI, yeah.
Will be a good business too, right? So
military applications, totally. So McKinsey came out with a very short report saying, kill the 2-week sprint and ship every 24 hours because of AI. I agree. The best teams are shipping every single, or coding and shipping every 24 hours instead of going through these long, arduous 2-week sprint planning sessions.
I thought people had adopted quick build methods for a while though. I don't think there's anything new. Like I've seen people that do daily builds, daily releases,
but that's on the tail end of a 2-week development and release cycle. So okay. Like it's content, it's continuously deploying. However, these things are being the works for 2 weeks. So you're always deploying, but you're working on something for 2 weeks. This is saying that the entirety of planning, designing, building should be comprised into a 24-hour window.
Do you agree?
Because of AI. Yeah, I agree. Completely agree.
Is that what you guys do?
This is exactly what we do.
Which is crazy.
Which is absolutely.
I've worked at places and I've been like, I've been a lot of places where we tried to do some like agile marketing methodology and all these things and like.
Agile marketing. Nice.
Sometimes they're like, I don't know, like, I'm trying to think like, sometimes I think they've been valuable in trying to get people to work as a team in marketing and work with other teams, like try to align with products. So that's one thing I like about trying to adopt this like across teams. But on the other hand, I think of like my own process, the way I like to do things. Like, I guess at this stage, I'd be like, I'm kind of against process personally. Like, I just kind of do things. And I want to say this. I don't want to like go too. I'm sure I get this right. Because like you and I also are very systems driven. Maybe that's my preferred term. Systems. Like there's like ways I do things and I systematize it. But I still like to have a lot of like open-ended like ways to
discovery.
Work. Like I try to structure my day. Sometimes I try to over-organize myself and it doesn't work. I've tried to do things like I'm going to work on this thing for like 2 hours. Like it doesn't work for me. like I get my work done. Like I kind of know what I need to get done during the day and I just kind of do things. And like maybe I need to take a break and get a drink, or I come up with a clever idea, or I start like arguing with someone on Twitter. Like I have found that like I can't like eliminate those distractions from my work. And what works for me is like just having like a target, accomplish this task. And then I always get it accomplished. And I'd love to think that I do it really well. But just how I get there, in my mind, it's kind of messy. Like I kind of come up with a cool idea at night, and then maybe I send myself an email and then I kind of work on it and then I do this and I kind of stumble through it is how I feel. It's not very
clean.
Actually
exactly. That's actually pretty much the takeaway from what Mackenzie is saying. Like the human part now should be very like exploratory, and also you're guiding this AI system. All of the actual doing and producing the output should be done when you're not in front of a computer. The AI should be doing all of that.
Yeah. So here's a good example, like for our show, right? So we have a channel, we just drop links and ideas in it all day. And then eventually we look at it and pull all the best ones out, and then we'll process, right? It's like at this time, all the topics need to be decided on. They need to be in the stock and we're going to talk about it and we're going to go for it, and boom, it happens, right? But it's very organic, like how those things happen and like where those ideas come from. And I guess that was the point I'm making, is like, I've always felt like these systems like discounted that there was this need for like a lot of like, at least for me, I want to call it random. Like I just need to be able to do things and kind of randomly. And then there's like a delivery date, or there's some structure on the end about how it needs to ultimately happen. And I just kind of get there. And however I get there is how I get there. And that's what's always like, I know, worked for me.
It's random. Everything at the end of the day, slightly random.
I don't miss deadlines. That really frustrates me. But for me, like, yeah, there's a clear deadline. There's clear like deliverable, but just like, boom, here it is. All right, dude. Are we good? It's noon.
Yeah, we're good.
All right. Well, that's concludes today's show. So, hey, join us next week. We're live every week, every Thursday, 11 a.m. Pacific.
2 p.m. Eastern.
So, all right.
Every single week. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.